I'm gonna make him an offer again.
I feel the need for speed.
He's watched every movie more than once. He's Stephen Fenech.
Go ahead, make my day.
He's watched the latest Disney movies with his kids, but that's about it. He's Trevor Long.
You talking to me?
Together, they bring you the best movies you've never seen.
I will look for you. I will find you. And I will kill you.
Rent, buy or stream the latest and greatest movies on Fetch. Watch on a big screen Hisense TV.
Say hello to my little friend!
The best movies you've never seen.
The first rule of Fight Club is... you do not talk about Fight Club.
With Stephen Fenech and Trevor Long.
This is the captain. Brace for impact.
Hello and welcome to the best movies you've never seen. My name is Stephen Fenech and I'm the movie nerd of the podcast where I've seen all these movies and I'm joined each and every week by my co-host Trevor Long, who basically this podcast was named after him, the best movies he's never seen. Trev, welcome.
We can basically count how many movies I've watched because you go take the Disney Pixar movies and add the number of episodes we've done. That's my movie catalog.
That's your movie knowledge. And you know what? It's the best movies you've never seen for a couple of reasons, because a lot of people may not have heard of these movies, like Trevor. They might not have even been born when these movies came out. But also the best movies you've never seen in the way that we discuss them. There's things behind the scenes that we sort of show you, and you really get a real insight into the movie, even if you've watched it.
And that's the key thing here is if you watch this like Stephen did, spoiler alert, in the cinemas, when you were younger or just recently, whatever it is, you might learn something different about the movie.
Yeah.
And as Stephen often does, re-watching it, you might see different things.
Stuff. Yeah, I still do, yes.
But I love – my favourite thing about this show is actually the idea of introducing these movies to another generation. You know, if you're someone who hasn't seen this movie, not because you missed it, but because it wasn't out when you were born or that age or whatever.
Well, it was released
Happy
in –
Happy days.
Let's talk about what
not
the movie
this one.
Is. World War Z, however you want to say that, released in 2013, so not that long ago.
Okay.
Starring Brad Pitt and directed by Mark Foster. Now, this was based on a book, a novel by Max Brooks.
Okay.
Now, Brad Pitt said he wanted to make this movie, and I'm quoting him, "The whole thing started because I just wanted to do a film that my boys could see before they turned 18, one that they would like anyways, and they love a zombie."
Oh, wow.
That's why he made this.
I love that.
But there was a solid bidding war for the book.
Right.
Max Brooks wrote the book. There was a bidding war between Warner Brothers and supported by Leonardo DiCaprio's production company, Appian Way. And on the other side was Paramount, backed by Brad Pitt's production company called Plan B. Now, Plan B, and along with some help with Paramount, secured the rights for the book for $1 million.
That doesn't seem like a lot.
Well, it's not a bad...
For the basis of a movie.
I'd say that just to have the film rights, and I don't know whether you had a back-end deal or anything, I think once you hand over the rights, that's it. But $1 million, you've written a book.
That's what I'm saying.
$1 million.
You've written a book, you've done well as an author, but you've also created the basis for a movie for $1 million.
You have, but you're not taking on any of the risk.
That's
the studio will say, we're taking all the risk buying your story and we're going to make it into a movie that's got to make money.
And also one of the things, this would be a fascinating thing to understand, but you obviously would negotiate, and I would think they would rarely win the favour to have control over the storyline, because once it goes to screenwriting,
exactly,
it could change almost entirely.
Well, you know what? There's a lot to say about book v. movie, which we're going to cover like a tarpaulin a bit later in the show.
Right.
But the screenplay for this movie, do you remember we've spoken about there's been these blacklists in Hollywood where this was on that list of the most liked unmade scripts of the year. It was featured as far back as 2007 as one of the best unmade scripts, and it didn't hit cinemas till 2013. So
Jeez.
It's sat on this list for 6 years.
Wow.
Righto. So you had any impressions, no impression before your first viewing?
I knew what you told me last week, which was that the Z stands for zombies, and that's it. Okay. I've never heard of it.
Right. You've never heard of Brad Pitt, though.
I'm across his
You're
work.
You're across Brad Pitt's work.
Yeah. He's the most handsome man in the world. Yeah. He doesn't age.
I'm surprised your wife never watched this with you.
Oh, hello. No, but she's watched Oceans way too many times.
Hello. All righty. Well, there was a fair bit of buzz and a fair bit of reaction to this movie. And Max Brooks, the author, is on the record publicly stated that he felt there was very little in common with the book beyond the basics of the storyline.
But I got my $1 million.
Exactly. Now, I'll preempt a little bit what's going to happen later. The book is basically a retrospective. So the book is a series of interviews talking about what happened during World War Z and this outbreak.
Yep.
Whereas the film is obviously like almost a first person, things are happening,
right.
Everything's moving. That's the major difference.
Gotcha.
Now, Max Brooks he was on social media and about what he thought about the movie version. I've got his quote here.
Wow.
He said, "I expected to hate it. I wanted to hate it and I wanted it to suck. And then I went to see it and it didn't suck and I didn't hate it."
Even though it's vastly different.
Totally different. "And I specifically thought I would hate it because of the differences from the book. But what shocked me was that it was exactly because of the differences from the book that I didn't hate it."
That is wild.
Yeah, it was just like someone else's movie. It had nothing to do with me. I didn't have
but
a
But I
moment.
Got the money.
Yeah, I got the cash. But the major difference too is that the character played by Brad Pitt, which is Jerry Lane, not in the book. So he was a character created to sort of drive the narrative in the film.
Yeah.
That's the major difference.
It's still the basis. Yeah. It's still there. Like, you wouldn't have this movie without the book.
Yes, there is, but huge – like, the book had a massive fan base, and there was an outcry when this movie came out that we'll cover a little later.
Right, okay.
All right. This is your last exit before the freeway. If you haven't seen World War Z, you can catch it on Fetch.
Pick up the remote and just ask Fetch to watch World War Z, because we are Australians, not imbecilic people who say the thing wrong. Come on, let's be real.
All right.
And you'll find this is a great example, this movie, of Fetch's depth. You'll find it's available to rent for $3.99, to buy for $14.99. But it's also available if you've already got a Paramount Plus subscription, if you've got a Stan subscription. And so that means that when you ask to search for this, it'll come up and it will immediately say, click to watch if you've got a Stan subscription. Or if you don't have a Stan subscription but do have Paramount Plus, it will say click to watch. If you don't have either of those subscriptions, it will suggest that you rent or buy it. It gives you the most affordable and the best quality version of this show in an instant, while also delivering the other options should you choose to. Because the great thing about Stan is Netflix, Disney Plus, Apple TV Plus, Prime Video, Paramount, and Stan are all on Fetch. They're all there. And that can't be said about all the streaming boxes out in the market right now. All the services are there today to watch when you want, as well as the ability to rent and buy movies, 10,000 different movies to choose from. You are never going to be short of something to watch on Fetch. And you can find out more at fetchtv.com.au. And, of course, you can buy it at JB Hi-Fi, Harvey Norman, the good guys, or through internet providers like Aussie Broadband and Telstra.
You have now sat through World War Z.
Yep.
It's, I think, slightly over 2 hours, about 2 hours. Two hours.
I think it came in just under.
Okay. Yeah. So around the 2 hour mark.
Yep.
What are your impressions? Was it what you expected?
No. I'll say it wasn't what I expected.
Okay.
And I think you knowingly preempted the zombie thing with me last week just to say, just relax.
Yeah.
Because I'm not a zombie fan.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not a zombie fan.
Okay.
And I will say to you broadly that. That didn't come through in my sense of the movie, and that's a good thing, right?
Yes.
So I think you were right to caution me with that. There's also this moment, and I'll get to it when we do the run-through, but I had this kind of deja vu about a certain part of it where they were at the WHO lab. I don't know whether there's another movie that did a similar thing or whether I came across this or something, but I felt this weird sense of having seen this style of there's a lab and they've got to get into it and they've got to be cautious and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. I felt like I'd seen that in something.
There were some films sort of like – and sort of COVID-like films. Like Contagion was one that kind of was like predicted COVID like 11 years before it happened. There were labs and getting vaccines and various things.
Here, I'll say, the number one thing I'll say at this part of the show before I give my full review later is I don't think I would have liked this movie if we hadn't have gone through COVID.
Ah, okay.
Because you know me.
It had some
sort of callbacks. I'm a sense of real – I like reality.
Yes.
And in 2019, this is absolute fantasy.
Yeah.
But in post-2020, there's parts of this you go, oh, yeah, they're in lockdown. You know, like –
yeah, there's even a mention, if you listen closely and as watch as many times as I have, there's a mention of H1N1.
Right,
remember that's like a COVID reference?
Yeah.
Was that and so there's that a mention the of that. Flu, yeah. So there's a mention of that in
so
this.
So, yeah, look, yeah. It was not – I expected to hate it.
Right.
I didn't hate it.
Good start. So what is your social media offering
my
on this
social
one?
Media post is – the Z stands for zombies. Don't let that put you off.
Oh.
Brad Pitt's in this.
Well, I watched this at the movies, and despite Joe, despite Brad Pitt being in the movie, Joe was not interested.
Yeah.
She said, no, this is for you. I went by myself. And I have rewatched it multiple times. I think Joe watched half of it with me one time. She goes, no, this is stupid. I'm not going to watch this. So it was a lone watch for me. Has been every other time. Let's get into the cast. And look, the only really major actor in this is Brad Pitt, who plays Jerry Lane. A lot of little actors, but it's Brad Pitt's in every single scene of the movie. Yeah. He is of course in Starting Seven, which we'll do one day.
Yep.
Ocean's 11, which we have done. Fight Club, which we have done.
Yep.
And one of your favorites, Moneyball, which we've done
good movie. Great.
But
movie.
I will mention in the casting call the director. The director is Mark Foster. And recently he directed a nice movie with starring Tom Hanks called A Man Called Otto. Do you remember if you've seen that movie?
Yes. They're in a little
cul-de-sac.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
He also directed a Bond film, Quantum of Solace. And guess what? I interviewed him.
Oh, wow.
When I worked at the Daily Telegraph
after
he made Quantum of Solace. And one of my questions was, this is the only Bond film that doesn't have the phrase Bond, James Bond.
Oh, well, I was going to say, did you introduce yourself as Stephen Fennec?
I did. There was a story I wrote for the Daily when I worked at the Daily Telegraph. Righto, before we get to the run-through, let's chat about our other great sponsor. And look, we talk about big screen experiences.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about Hisense's laser TVs. Now, if you want to have that cinematic feel in your home, the Laser Series is a short-throw projector available with a 100-inch or 120-inch screen. The screen comes with it. Okay, you do have the ALR screen. That's the ambient light rejection screen. But this is a technology that's remarkable. You sit it close to the wall, where you would normally put your television anyway, and you have up to a 120-inch screen, 3,000 ANSI lumens of brightness. It has the Trichroma X-Fusion 3 pure color laser. That technology has the most accurate color standard on the market. It achieves 107% of the color gamut. And look, not only looks great, it has Dolby Vision HDR, but also it sounds great. Dolby Atmos built in. There are speakers built in here, so you're getting cinema level audio with that Dolby Atmos. Sounds coming from above you, around you, behind you. It's amazing. And I mentioned the included ambient light rejection screen. That is installed on your wall, and it does. Even if you're watching during bright daylight, the light rejection, the screen has a structure so that all the ambient light is kind of dimmed away, and all you're getting is the great screen quality from the projector. It also runs the Vidar U6 operating system. So it's just like a smart TV.
Yep.
Same OS. You can easily find your content, get to what you want to watch. You've got all your streaming services, free-to-air TV. It's basically just like a TV, but different. And with a bigger screen, 120 inches or 100 inch, it's up to you. But check them out if you want to take a close look at hisense.com.au. Now, let's get started here. This is it starts off in Philadelphia. And
I just need to stop you right here.
Yeah.
Because I've got a great big screen and I'm lucky enough to have a really good sound system.
Yep.
This, for some reason, this movie, you know, I must be in the Paramount thing that came up.
Yeah.
This had a very good intro mix.
Another layer of sound.
Because, you know, often the DTS or whatever those, mate, this layer of sound in this, I thought and it came through during that intro that they were going to utilize it properly.
Yeah. So good, like you mean it's like the good
use of
sound.
Surround everywhere, and it was used throughout the movie very well. I just want to point that out.
The sound design
possible,
sit
properly and turn up the soundbar on this one.
I watched this in my theater again for the show, and it gave every speaker a nice workout, including my two subwoofers as well, which
of
my
course.
wife wasn't very
impressed
with. Sorry,
Philadelphia.
So, we see former UN employee Jerry Lane with his wife Karen, their two daughters. Happy little family. Yep. The kids jump in there. They wake up mum and dad. They're making brekkie.
Yep. There's a reference to the fact that he used to work somewhere and now he's at home because he wants to see the kids. You get a bit of a sense of that.
Yeah, and they enjoy breakfast together. They head out. They're stuck in traffic. And then there's drama. It's like the side mirror gets knocked off.
Smashes off his side mirror.
And they're wondering what happens. And then all of a sudden there's an explosion in the distance.
What? Imagine seeing that.
Chaos. They end up, the motorcycle, the cop next to him says, get out, stay in your car. Then he gets hit by a truck and it's pandemonium.
And he does, if you ever do that when the fire engine or ambulance comes past with lights and sirens and they clear the lane and you go, you know what?
What's that called, tailgating?
It's heavy traffic, but I might as well slipstream him through.
Slipstream, he does that and they get into, or their car gets hit, they manage to get into an SUV.
Yep.
And or not what
a
are they
mini,
called?
RV.
RV. And they then see that he does notice that the zombies are cracking windows with their heads and everything. Let's get to the talking points here. It's not much of a build up before boom, there's zombies.
I enjoy that. It's like, hey, we got a real simple scene setting here. We know who the characters are. And then I'm into it. It's a zombie movie straight up. But this moment, there's this moment in here where, they're witnessing all this happen. And you notice Brad Pitt's character, Jerry, observe. Like he waits to observe someone who was attacked and then becomes a zombie.
Get to the RV.
Here comes the number 12 train. One.
So that's how quickly a person was infected and became a zombie.
Became a zombie because you get these convulsions and then up they go. They want to.
He was up. And I've got to say, from the get go, these aren't your slow lumbering zombies. No. They're fast, these zombies.
Yes.
It's a different flavor of a zombie in this movie. So what we see, the Lanes decide to head to Newark in New Jersey.
Yep.
And when they're in the RV, so they decide that they're heading to Newark and our man Jerry Lane gets a call.
It's Jerry.
Where are you?
Airborne, Lower East Side, Turtle Bay. It's all gone. We barely made it out. Tell him to go south.
No, we need to make more information.
What is this?
We don't know. How close were you?
Face to face.
Daddy!
Is it true?
Are they... Connie, give me that. Give me that. Oh, thank you, honey.
Where are you?
95, heading north.
Okay.
All right, we'll try to get a helicopter to you. I'll call you back with an extraction point. Can you hold out for another hour?
Do we have a choice?
This is not for old time's sake, my friend. I'll need you.
So that was a former colleague of Jerry. Jerry, remember, used to work for the UN?
Yes.
And this was his former colleague, and he was his first phone call when this thing happened. So he's got some expertise in the field here, and they're heading to Newark. And he says they're going to have to last the night. They find out
he gets another call later saying, mate, you're going to have to wait a night, bunker down.
They take refuge in an apartment, and there's a young there's
a lot of chases here. It's a lot of, there's zombies at them, so they've got to block a door. Then they've got to, it's active. Like,
some
this is a really,
here,
really active movie. But this moment when they get into an apartment, it's like a couple with a couple of kids.
Yeah.
It's like
young
you know,
boy named Tommy.
Very, very simple. It's just one kid, isn't it?
It is.
Yes. And, but they've got two kids. And, they sleep there the night.
Yeah.
Tommy, there's one point where Jerry thinks his daughter's gone missing, but actually finds her in a cupboard with Tommy, who was comforting her.
Yeah, she was calm, keeping her calm. Because I think you heard in that other bit of audio, I think one of them had like an asthma attack or something. She was trying to calm down. So, yeah, naturally, everyone's alarmed. But the person that was on the phone before that spoke earlier was the UN Deputy Secretary General Thierry Yumotoni. That was the guy on the phone. It's an old friend of Jerry's. And he sends the helicopter that extracts them and Tommy as well. Tommy, the little boy, goes with them as well.
So the little boy, you think, mate, so here's what I witnessed as my first view. You think, because this kid comes out and he's like, oh, my God, there's Tommy. Like, we've got to take him with us. And my first thought is, Tommy, what's happened to your family? And why are you here? Why did you leave them? Like, why would you leave your family? And it's seconds later, because the zombies come out, that you see Tommy's dad.
His dad was a zombie. Because earlier on, do you remember where Jerry was saying to him, look, you know, movement is life. You've got to keep moving. If you stay still, there's going to be. And they said, you know what, we want to stay put and look what happens.
Yeah.
So they end up getting picked up. There's quite a scene there. They get picked up. And this is a good part here where in his battle to get to the roof, he gets sprayed with blood.
Yeah, pretty epic.
And you see what he does? He gets to the ledge of the building.
He runs to the edge, and as a first-time viewer, you're thinking, what's he looking for? What are you looking for? But it takes just a couple of seconds for you to realize he's counting to 12 to see whether he's going to convulse, because he wants to fall off the edge so that he doesn't kill his family. If he turns into a zombie. Like,
very considerate of him, don't you
reckon? Like, what a thought process.
Yeah. And then when we find out that he's okay, then the helicopter comes and off they go.
Yep.
They're taken to a U.S. naval vessel somewhere in the Atlantic, and there's a whole military personnel, scientists there trying to analyze the worldwide outbreaks. Now, there is a doctor on board, Dr. Andrew Fassbach, who has a theory on what's happened.
Is what the hell is it?
About 5% of the population aren't affected immediately.
It is viral. It has to be viral. There is no plausible alternative. And like any virus, once we find its origin, we can develop a vaccine.
Sound familiar?
That's Dr. Fassbach. Virologist from Harvard.
The analogy I keep coming back to is Spanish flu.
Spanish flu?
It didn't exist in 1918, but by 1920, it killed 3% of the world.
He's our best bet at figuring out what this thing is.
Can you imagine if during COVID they mentioned, like, zombie? You could turn into a zombie.
Oh, my God.
It was bad enough, hey, being stuck at home.
That would keep you in lockdown, though.
That'd be a way
to stop you worrying about whether the golf courses were open.
But the word zombie was mentioned in an email for the first time while communicating the symptoms of the disease.
You all read the same email I did, and it said zombies.
So the earliest mention of the word zombie was in a memo from Camp Humphreys in South Korea. We haven't had contact with them since, but this could lead us to the origin.
If we knew where this thing started, then we'd have a chance of developing a vaccine to stop it.
I didn't choose the
So we're sending Dr. Fassbach there to look for the source.
He's just a kid.
You're right.
And that's where he wants him to go with him.
He does, yeah. So Jerry is asked, I think one of the colonels or something comes down and says, listen, you got to go. And he's basically told, look, if you don't go, your family's going to get kicked off.
Your secretary here says you were his best investigator when you were at the UN. We'll send you in with the team. Help Dr. Fassbach find whatever it is he needs.
Right. I wanted for the circumstances to speak for themselves.
No. Captain. I'm not your guy.
You were on the ground during the Liberian Civil War. Investigated Chechen war crimes. Sri Lanka in 07. Places you and I both know Dr. Fassbach wouldn't last a night in.
Jerry, a handful of SEALs will go with your security force.
No.
My guys will get you in. You assist the doctor, pursue any leads. My guys will get you out. We do the heavy lifting.
Can't help you. I can't leave my family.
Take a look around here, Mr. Lane. Each and every one of these people are here because they serve a purpose. There's no room here for non-essential personnel. There's a long line of people waiting for one of those bugs.
Yeah, bloody oath.
Yeah, well, this is
I'm with the captain on this one.
Yeah, it's interesting little turn here, because normally in a movie the hero decides to do it out of the kindness of their heart.
Right.
Whereas here it's they've blackmailed him. Well, they said, look, if you don't go, then your family, see you later.
He should have done that from the start. The bloke said on the phone, it's not as a friend, I need you. He said that.
Yeah.
So
then he has to break into his
wife. Why else would you get a bloody helicopter escort? And again, his wife in this. He's freaking out, and she's like, "You can't do this." But I mean,
He says,
she should understand. She's on a boat safe.
They're
going to
kick you off the ship if he doesn't do it. So it's kind of, you know what, no choice in the matter.
Exactly.
They decide to head to South Korea. Remember, that's where the zombie email originated from. And so Jerry and Fastback, you know, that young doctor, fly to Camp Humphreys, which is a military base in South Korea.
Yeah. And they get there and they've they've got military guards, but they've also got their own weapons, including the doctor. Yeah. He's got like a handgun.
Little gun, yeah.
And there's a bit where they're standing and it's raining and there's a shot of him. And you see his finger, and Jerry says to him, "Mate, keep your finger off the trigger."
Yeah,
and then the zombies are coming
out of the dark. The
old mate trips over and shoots himself in the noggin.
Yeah, see you later. He runs up back up the ramp. Boom, shoots himself in the head. Okay, he's done. That's the reason why we came here, was to get his expertise. So we learn in this bit here that the zombies are drawn to sound.
Sound, yeah,
yeah. So and we're also told body shots don't stop them.
Headshots.
Only headshots. Sounds like Call of Duty. If you're playing Call of Duty, headshots count better. That was a pretty scary little section there where they're just coming. I liked how they're just coming out of the dark all of a sudden, and you really need to be on your reflexes.
Mm.
But after being rescued, Jerry learns that the infection was introduced to the base by a doctor.
Now, there's 15, 16 guys in this room. Most of them guards, but all of them were bitten. Trying to get this man handcuffed to the cop. Now, our colonel said he was the first one.
This colonel, is he around?
Oh, yeah, he's right here.
Yeah, he was in a burnt to a crisp.
Yeah.
The guy is shackled. Do you know who bit him, what bit him?
He was the base doctor. He just returned from the field. Been sent out to verify the death of a soldier who had just gone AWOL the week before. Some villagers had found this guy foaming at the mouth, oozing some kind of black tar. Then he tried to bite one of them. They shot him, tied him up, threw him in a barn. That's all we know, except the doctor comes back here and begins attacking his patients.
So there was like a farmer. So the villager was the patient zero.
Yep.
The doctor was patient one.
Yep.
Who the soldiers incinerated. But there was a soldier who had like a lame leg. He had some sort of medical condition.
See, I looked at him and thought he must have been attacked, but then they checked them all, whatever.
But they ignored him.
Apparently the zombies ignored him.
Put a pin in that one. A prisoner at the base is there. This is weird. This bloke was pulling his teeth out.
Yeah.
Former CIA operative tells Jerry to go to Jerusalem, where he says there is a safe zone there that's maintained by the Israeli Mossad.
Now, why do you have to burn them to ashes to get them to finally stop? Why do they move like a plague? Why is Israel winning?
How's Israel winning?
They sealed off their entire country. Days before the undead attacked man. First to know, first to act.
People have been building walls there for two millennia.
Hmm. Right, yeah, but finish all those thousands of years of work a week ago. Impeccable timing is all.
So he thinks that's interesting.
Yeah, mate, the bloke's a spy. He knows what to look for.
He knows a few things.
And see, this is the thing. I think, because they've... this bloke's in a cell.
Yeah.
The military think he's
pulling
a goose.
Pulling out his teeth.
Yeah. But Jerry is an investigator.
Yeah.
Jerry has spent his life doing this. So he's looking at that going, well, this bloke is
they
making.
They must know something.
He's making points.
Yeah, exactly right.
So Jerry buys it, basically.
He thinks, okay, let's go take a look. As Jerry and his team, they said, right, let's go. They head back. Do you notice they ride back to the egg on bikes?
Which one they of them didn't was squeaky, drive. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah, they didn't want to make too much sound, right? But Jerry gets a call on his satellite phone and the zombies wake up and attack.
It's like the worst possible thing to happen. And it did feel a bit stupid to me.
Well,
but what it did...
They did wake up the zombies.
What it did was very clearly and simply demonstrate that attracted to noise.
Sound, absolutely.
Potion,
part of the zombies. And what happens, the captain was infected and he commits suicide just outside the plane. Yep. And he's here, bang, he shoots himself. So it's only Jerry and
he
the
says
pilot.
To them, no, I'm going to do it myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Jerry and the pilot escape. They take off. And did you like how they ran into the cockpit, locked the door, and all the zombies got on the back of the plane,
yeah.
the cargo
until
plane?
Then they took off and they all fell out. Yeah, it's very good.
So see you later. So look, couple of talking points. My first talking point is Jerry should have had his phone on silent.
Yeah, I think so.
Cost a few people their lives.
Yeah.
Second point is they witness a nuclear explosion from the air.
And you wonder, like,
where is that?
Like, that's the idea there is that's to portray that there's other countries now because they're in Korea leaving now. So it's like.
So they're in Asia.
There's another country that has decided the best way around this is to get out, obviously evacuate what they can and nuke it.
Nuke it.
Boom. Wow.
So anyway, they get to Jerusalem, and in Jerusalem, Jerry meets Mossad chief Jürgen Warmbrunn, who explains that months earlier, they had intercepted an Indian military message.
Jürgen Warmbrunn, high-ranking official in the Mossad, described as sober, efficient, not terribly imaginative, and yet you build a wall because you read a communique that mentions the word zombie?
Hmm. Well, if put like that, I'd be skeptical as well.
In the 30s, Jews refused to believe they could be sent to concentration camps. In 72, we refused to fathom we'd be massacred in the Olympics. In the month before October 1973, we saw Arab troop movements, and we unanimously agreed they didn't pose a threat. Well, a month later, the Arab attack almost drove us into the sea. So we decided to make a change.
Change?
The 10th man. If nine of us look at the same information and arrive at the exact same conclusion, it's the duty of the 10th man to disagree. No matter how improbable it may seem, the 10th man has to start digging with the assumption that the other nine are wrong.
And you were the 10th man.
Precisely.
That is a awesome just general the theory.
Man. Yeah.
Like if I was running a bank or a multi-billion-dollar company, I would instill that in the management team.
Yeah.
I'd be like, it's fine one that you all agree, but one of you has to step out
and stand by
and tell us everything that could happen here. Yeah. That's the only way to have eyes on what can go wrong. It's brilliant.
The examples he gave was that no one in the 30s thought the Jews were going to be killed in a concentration camp.
Yeah.
So they took the lessons from history and thought, this time we're going to get ahead of it. Mm. And that's exactly what they did.
And they did. They built a massive wall.
They quarantined Jerusalem.
Yeah. There's great
shots.
That's
the section that was filmed in Malta. That was all filmed in Malta. All the Jerusalem scenes was filmed at Fort San Elmo and also in Valletta there.
It was really good external shots of, lots of zombies, coming up against the wall and just,
They climb up the wall.
There's clearly some level of quarantine outside that allows them to get, because they're letting people in and they're scanning them. There's this kind of staged process inside
like
the wall of a checkpoint, but to the point where they've got multiple layers within that checkpoint.
And cages and everything.
But there's a bunch of, I think they were Palestinian, to be honest. They had flags.
They were singing
but did
loud
you notice
songs.
The Palestinian flags?
Yeah.
I thought it was fascinating, given what's going on now, because it was like the Jews had let the Palestinians in.
Oh.
For refuge.
Okay,
so I don't like. I'm not.
Didn't age well.
I'm not a student of history, but I thought that was a fascinating.
Okay.
Good
inclusion. Good observation.
And they were making they had the speakers going. They were chanting. They were happy. Like they were. They thought they had been saved.
But I know they're attracted to sound. I just found it that all the sound that's there, helicopters and everything.
Yeah, why would,
why would the song happen?
100%.
Just when Jerry's there.
Yeah.
So that's what happens. They came, so they scale, they all sort of stack one on top of each other. They sort of, what do you call that? Like a.
It's a human pyramid.
Human pyramid.
But not a cheerleader style one, like a dead body style. Yeah.
And they scale the wall and manage to get out. They start diving over the wall.
And Jerry notices it.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, we've got to get out of here. Yeah.
So what happens? He said, look, I'm.
He gets escorted.
He gets an escort from Jürgen. He says, look, you get back to the plane. On his way, though, he notices something.
Yeah.
There's all these zombies running down this path. And there's this young, skinny young kid with no hair, like a cancer patient.
They just walk past him.
And no one goes near him.
But let me be clear.
Yeah.
As a first time viewer,
you thought nothing of that.
Like, no. What you see is.
Yeah.
There's something going on there.
Yeah.
You notice it and you think, why is this happening? But you do not.
Yeah.
Trust me.
You don't put
you don't
two and
think
two
cancer.
Together. Yeah, of course.
You know what I mean?
I don't think you meant to at that point.
No.
Yeah. So Jerry's escort, a female soldier, gets bitten on the hand. And what does he do? He amputates
her. He just immediately grabs a bayonet and just chops it off.
Yeah. And then to stop her turning, and he wraps it up, makeshift wrap.
Counts
it to 12. She's okay. They escape on a commercial airliner just as Israel is
because
overrun.
By the way, his plane, the bloke just left.
Yeah. See ya.
Bailed on him.
Yeah, he went. They're on a commercial flight now. And as he's treating the soldier's amputated arm, he sort of flashes back and he makes a bit of a realization. Yeah.
This is critical.
This prick stands right in the mix while seven or eight of them turn Zeke all at the same time.
Is that how you tweaked your leg?
Nah, shit's been bugging me a while.
Got no time for his lucky ass.
Now the hard part is seeing the crumbs. For the clues there.
Sometimes the thing you thought was the most brutal aspect of the virus turns out to be the chink in its armor.
I don't have answers. All you can do is find a way to hide.
That's important. Jerry, on his way, contacts Thierry, you know, the dude from the UN. And the airline is diverted. He goes, look, I've got a theory. I want to go somewhere. They get diverted to the World Health Organization facility outside Cardiff in Wales. On the way, though, Jerry, he gets an idea on how to stop it. He gets the call into Thierry. But on the plane, now you notice, remember when the zombies were sort of overtaking
airport? There's a thing that happens here which you require all of our 130 plus movie knowledge to know about, which is the plane lift
little elevator
to the lower galleys.
I think what happened, one of the zombies got up into the landing gear and popped out from the elevator and bit one of the stewardesses.
Because she was just putting towels or something in there to send them down.
And just popped out.
Old mate comes in because she pressed the button.
And then what happens, more people are infected and then it becomes imagine on a plane. Like that was a really powerful scene. You're in an enclosed area on a plane. What are you going
to
do?
And there's a moment here where Jerry clearly realizes that they're attracted to sound and knows that now because he gets them all to be quiet in the first class cabin and they try and
they start
prevent it all
bags,
from happening. And then he sets off a grenade to blow like flight that went over the Pacific.
Someone makes a noise and he's thinking, look, what have I got here? Remember the girl that was with him with one arm? She had a gun still, was shooting them as they came into the cabin. But he's thinking, and I think he bats one out of the way. And they had made a little pile of bags to try to keep them out, but they got straight through that.
Yeah.
And he thought, I've got a grenade here. Let's see what happens here.
Yeah.
Boom.
Dramatic decompression, which sucks all the zombies out.
They all get, and the plane crashes.
And the plane crashes. Yeah. Now, I'm just going to tell you.
Yeah.
This is the only part of the movie that I just really hated.
Like what?
Because the plane crashes, they survive.
Yeah.
Forget that, okay? Yeah. Preparation, maybe everything, right?
Yeah.
But they walk. And they end up just at the WHO.
Well, they were on their way there. Were near there.
Mate, come on.
Yeah, I guess.
Come on.
I guess. A little bit of suspension of disbelief.
Even 20 minutes from landing, which they definitely were because they hadn't fully hit approach.
I don't think there was Ubers back then.
They were a fair way off and they stumbled across it.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Well, he does use the grenade, as you said, and they crash. Jerry, though, is injured. Remember, there was like a bit of metal through his side.
Yeah, awful.
It looked pretty
that
bad.
Was good makeup, too. Yeah. It was well done.
It was through his...
I felt it.
I don't think that was real. That was makeup, eh?
I'm pretty confident, yeah.
So both he and the woman, her name's Segan, they arrive at in Wales. Now, this is the WHO, the staff take him in. He wakes up 3 days later, and they all think he's dead.
Yeah.
But he told them, look, he has a theory based on the people he has seen. He's got a theory on what they can do.
And Mr. Lane believes we can use such a disease against the undead.
Well, I would give you points for originality, Mr. Lane, if we hadn't already tried that first thing. One of the many things a virus or bacteria needs to thrive is a live host.
Functioning circulatory system.
I'm afraid it boils down to one simple fact.
Can't make a dead person sick.
It's not for them. It's for us. I believe these things have a weakness. And that weakness is weakness. Our weakness. I have witnessed them literally bypass people. Walk right around them like a river around a rock. Why? I think because those people were sick. I think they were terminal, and these things could sense it. I think they're spreading a pathogen, and they need a healthy host.
But even if you're right, I mean, infecting the populace with a lethal illness is not exactly a cure.
It's not a cure. It's camouflage.
Great line.
Do you remember how he said you got to find a way to hide?
Because I didn't struggle to get my head around. I understood exactly what he was saying. But then I thought, because you often think about, in our jobs, we try and explain complex things, right?
Yes.
What a great way to explain this absolutely bat poo crazy idea of infecting people with a deadly disease to
so
act
that
as
zombies
a camouflage, which is essentially, you go back, you flash back to, oh, maybe that the leg, kid. To the little kid, and you go, that kid was invisible to them because he had some sort of terminal illness.
Yeah.
It also shows that, oh, mate, the leg has something more than just a sore leg.
Absolutely right, more than just a sprain.
So,
a couple of talking points here. So we know that the infected don't attack seriously injured or terminally ill people.
Yeah.
The reason for that is because they would be unsuitable hosts for viral reproduction.
Yeah.
So it is a type of viral thing we're looking at here.
It's a pretty cool premise. So here, can I go back now to the book v movie thing?
Yes.
So is
this
that
is all
premise,
told in past tense?
Is that premise?
Yes.
So all this premise and this this. So the book is the story of the virus and its transmission and all these things is the book.
This whole third act was different to the original script and slightly different to what was described in the book,
right?
Which we'll get into.
Okay.
But at this point, Jerry suggests that they test this. He wants to infect someone with a pathogen. Problem is, though, the pathogens are stored in a wing that's already overrun by zombies.
Yeah. And there's only one way to get in.
And it's so Jerry, Segan, and the lead doctor.
Can we just discuss the fact that a building only has one way in is not a massive plot hole?
Well, there's a bridge going to another building.
Yeah.
So there is a second building. So
they could have left their existing building, gone into the outside world, and just opened the door to the other building.
But they still would have had to get up to that level.
I understand.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm just saying they only explored one option for getting in.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying.
But there was, there was a bridge.
And getting out in this whole scenario. But anyway.
Yeah. I think so. All right. So what he does, they decide to head over there. They fight their way through. They're separated. So there's all these now. He's making noise here. They're making noise there.
Yeah, they've woken
doors
them.
Are creaking.
They were trying to be quiet, but
like,
then they made a noise.
I describe this like Pac-Man. You know, have you ever played Pac-Man?
Yeah, 100%.
Where you're trying to get all the dots, and then you can eat the pill, and you can eat the things, and then they can eat you.
Yeah, and Jerry's like the genius here because he saw the pill as being going a different way and making a lot of loud noise to draw them
to
away.
Them.
So the doctors could go and do their thing.
So Jerry gets to the pathogen vault. They tell him the code. He's in there. And the doctor and Segan, they return back to the main building.
By the way, he doesn't have the code, so they ring him.
They call him, on the phone.
Yeah. At that phone?
Yeah.
It was very loud.
Yeah,
it was very loud.
Well,
because straight after the phone call.
Well, he gets in the vault, though.
No. Straight after the phone call, he's trying to get into the vault. All right, he puts his axe down.
Yeah.
I'm like, mate, they just made a phone call. I think they're coming.
What is it with your loud phones around
you?
Here?
With me?
Yeah, okay. That is a good point.
So he gets in. Yes, he does. He gets in, he locks the door
and gets sort of trapped in there. A zombie corners him inside the vault. Now, this is my favourite zombie in the whole movie.
I think so too. He's also, what a great actor.
Yeah. He's sort of got his teeth rattling.
You have no lines.
Did you hear the teeth chattering as well? Yeah, it was awesome.
Mate, it's very good acting.
Yeah, it was great. I enjoyed that.
Solid makeup.
I was going to try put a bit of audio together of the teeth chattering there. Did you hear that?
It's hard to do.
Yeah. It was really funny. I enjoyed that bit.
Yeah.
Anyway, the zombie has cornered him. He injects himself with an unknown bacteria.
And you think, how long does this take? The zombie can still see him. But then you remember I flash back to when they first came into this building.
Yep.
There were zombies in a room and they were just kind of running past them, slowly. But they were just kind of they looked active, but they were actually dormant.
Yeah.
And so this was a moment where you're meant to think, is he dormant or is he active? Is he dormant or is he active?
He's at the door, mate.
And so he's at the door, but he's dormant.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's at the door.
He's waiting to react to something, is that what you're saying?
Yes, he's at the door and he's dormant because Brad Pitt is now infected.
Yes.
Right? But you don't really know. You're meant to think maybe he's still a threat.
He opens the door and literally comes face to face and he sort of half sniffs him and then walks around him.
Yeah.
And so he slowly walks back with a whole bunch of the things that he took from the vault.
Yep.
And I love this bit where he grabs a Coke or something from the vending machine.
Yeah.
And then empties the whole vending machine to make noise.
A lot of noise to attract them all down.
And they all, at this point, remember the doctor and Segan had run back across that bridge? And they were all at that door, and then he makes the noise. They all come back over the bridge to his side.
And he walks opposite to the flow.
And he just walks straight through the middle of them, the zombies. He walks back straight through back to the main building.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they've his suspicion, or his theory has actually worked.
This isn't the end. Not even close.
Hi there, this is Amy.
Hello. Is anyone out there?
We've had some luck finding people with this transmission.
We've lost entire cities.
Yeah. When there's no more people left to infect, they go dormant. Whole cities are lost.
The World Health Organization reports today that help may soon be...
Hybridized meningitis strain with components of smallpox and H1N1.
We still don't know how it started.
The World Health Organization has created a vaccine that works as a kind of camouflage, making people who receive it invisible to the infected.
We bought ourselves some time.
Volunteer forces are delivering the vaccine to areas that have been cordoned up.
Distribution efforts begin in earnest.
The importance of getting the information out to those still alive within the
But it's given us a chance.
So Jerry is reunited with his family.
Yeah.
At a safe zone in Freeport, Nova Scotia.
If you can fight, fight.
Head north if you can. Hello? Is there anyone out there hearing this?
Help each other.
Mexico City has been declared a complete loss.
Be prepared for anything. Our war has just begun.
Wild.
That was it. Now, a couple of favourite lines here. This is an early one. Remember when they hear on TV the daughter asking about martial law?
Daddy, what's martial law?
Martial law is like house rules, but for everybody.
It's a great, don't
good
you think?
Explanation.
Here's the thing, though. Just have a listen to that laugh again.
Yeah.
It's so genuine. Don't you think it's a really genuine laugh? It's
very good.
Really cool.
This is probably the best line in the whole movie where, remember when they're on the plane and that doctor, before he shoots himself in the head, describes Mother Nature as a serial killer.
Mm.
Mother Nature is a serial killer. No one's better, more creative. Like all serial killers, she can't help the urge to want to get caught. But what good are all those brilliant crimes if no one takes the credit? So she leaves crumbs.
Mm.
Now, the hard part, why you spend a decade in school, is seeing the crumbs for the clues they are. Sometimes the thing you thought was the most brutal aspect of the virus turns out to be the chink in its armor.
And he realised that exact thing.
Yeah.
All righty. Well, before we get to the plot holes, I thought we were going to talk book v film.
Yeah, good, okay?
The book takes a totally different approach, as I mentioned. The storyline being set 20 years after the pandemic.
Right.
So this is like a retrospective looking back at the war, at World War Z, whatever you want to call it. The book was actually subtitled An Oral History of the Zombie War. It's story told with multiple narrators and storylines, oral history, documentary style structure, and it was then turned into the hero's journey, the third person on rails, you know, the action happening at the time.
But the story the story is the same, but a new character is created to be the host of the story.
In present tense rather than past tense.
Like a first person narrator, essentially.
The other controversy was that in the book, the epidemic originated in China, not South Korea.
Would have been hilarious if it was in Wuhan.
Yeah, so the ground zero is first to believe in the book to be North Korea, ends up being India. The change, they reckon that the conspiracy theorists say that they moved away from China in the movie to help the film's chances of a better international box office.
Okay.
So they didn't want China to be offended.
Oh, poor
didn't. So they set it in Korea.
Interesting.
Okay, let's talk plot holes.
Yeah.
Well, they're not a plot hole. It's just weird where the motorcycle copper pulls up beside them, and you see like a shot of him traffic jammed, and then out of nowhere, this massive dumpster hits him from behind. Where'd that come from?
Pretty wild.
Yeah, just sort of materialized there. Things you might not know. Now, I told you that the film in its original script, the original cut, the Paramount executive Mark Evans didn't like it.
Right.
He said the last act in the original script was a massive ground war between humans and zombies in Russia. So they used a clip of it in that end sequence. They decided that, look, rather than this just being your typical bang, shoot 'em up, bang, ending.
They needed some context and encouragement.
They needed a bit more of an intellectual ending to it, like the whole bit of the World Health Organization.
Right?
Yeah, well, that this is when it was originally written, and it went through like three or four different writers. That was his take on it. They brought in Damon Lindelof, the bloke, one of the guys who was responsible for Lost back in the day.
Okay, yep.
And he suggested the new scene, sort of the whole third act rewrite, which gave it a bit more of a still an exciting ending, but it's the bit where Brad Pitt is in the World Health Organization working out the pathogen, the zombies not attacking him because he made himself sick.
Okay,
that was they decided.
Oh, I think they did
a bit more
tension
driven rather than action driven ending.
Yeah. Interesting.
Now, another thing you might not know, remember I mentioned the shooting in Malta, which was where the setting for the Jerusalem scenes was shot in Malta. Apparently, it was a bit of a nightmare because there were two film crews working with hundreds of extras. A lot of costs escalated the budget. Now, there was one day where all these thousands of people turned up and they didn't have enough food for the cast and the crew. And there was also, this is from the set, they were apparently tossed aside were a lot of purchase orders, so for related to the cast and extras that were just tossed in a drawer and forgotten, and they added up to millions of dollars. And so a bit of a budget oversight. And the script at that point still hadn't been finished. They were still working on the third act, thinking, this is a disaster.
Yeah.
There was several scenes shot in Budapest, including that was the scene for the finale was supposed to take place in Moscow's Red Square, the massive battle between the zombies and the Russians. And that was the bit shot in Budapest. But they decided they steered it towards a more intellectual ending, as I told you.
Yeah.
Just before – now, did you notice this? And take a look at this if you haven't seen it. Before – remember when he comes back and Jerry's talking to Warmbrand about India?
Mm.
Now, Jerry says, and you watch this closely, if I could get into India, where do I start? And his reply was, India is a black hole.
Mm.
Now, the lines originally named Russia, not India, as the black hole.
Right.
And you see him say Russia.
Oh, and then it's been dubbed.
He's dubbed over and you see him saying India.
Oh.
So editing, it really, the overdub doesn't really, is not concealed very well.
And is that, they changed that because of the ending?
Because of, also, but they didn't want to have.
They put China and Russia offside.
No, Russia. They changed Russia because that was originally the finale. It was
in India. Russia.
They decided that Russia, not India.
Okay.
The escape. Now, I thought you would have picked this up too. When they escaped, right? Did you notice this? When they escaped from Israel on an A310, the interior of the cabin was totally different. It was a 777 interior.
Yeah.
Did you pick that up?
I didn't pick it up, but
okay.
Now that you say it, it was very obvious.
A couple other little did you notices and semi-plot holes is they use satellite phones indoors.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need clean light of sight.
That was not going to work very well down in the bowels of that Navy ship.
Correct, and on the plane.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you need to see the sky.
Yep.
Right. I've only got two questions for Trev this week.
Oh, what?
Is this the first zombie movie you've watched?
Yeah, absolutely. Never seen one before in my life.
Question two, could there have been a sequel to this?
I was thinking about that, the book being set 20 years later, looking back. I feel like, you know, is it the rebuilding? Maybe you have a second coming of the bloody things or something. But yeah. No, I'd follow on from that.
I do have a third question. What happens to Jerry and the family? What is he? What's his role after that, you reckon?
Mate,
Does he help them rebuild the world?
No. He goes back into
family life.
They don't go to a New York apartment. They find a property in the middle of nowhere. Like this has put him off society, and they live off the grid after this. There's a good follow-up.
Absolutely. That could be
And he gets, you know, it's a beautiful life, and he gets another follow-up call from the UN and something else happens.
It could be
a different thing. It might not be zombies. It could be the pandemic.
Like, could be anything.
It could be a follow-up in another
global issue. Well, the whole next step, look, there's a lot of rebuilding to do. there's a movie in that, I reckon.
Yeah.
Alrighty, that was World War Z. Time for your wrap-up and rating.
There's no way that I could truly enjoy a zombie movie. You have to know that, Stephen.
Yeah, I understand.
So I don't know what you expected coming into this from me, and I feel like you probably have low expectations, and I think I'll disappoint you because I really loved it.
There you go.
I really loved this movie.
Okay,
yeah.
I thought you would.
I quite enjoyed it. It was one of those ones I sat down. And this sounds horrible, and I apologize, dear listener and Stephen, but I felt this one. I sat down; it felt like a job. You know, I'm being forced to watch this, and I will comment on it during the podcast, right?
Okay.
But I enjoyed it immensely, and it's probably an 8.5 for me.
Yeah, we're in agreement. Yeah, that was mine as well. 8.5.
Yeah. Well, that's wild.
That for you, that's a very generous score.
Yeah.
So I'm very proud of the reason fact you enjoyed that.
It was a zombie movie. I get it, but it was very well shot. It was great. Brad Pitt is excellent. And I do love the fact that everyone else was kind of unknown and they did great.
They did, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Great supporting cast. Like
it was a well-created movie, yeah.
Well,
I'm a fan.
I'm happy to hear that, Trev. I've got another one right.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, let's hope I got next week's right because it is something quite different.
Oh.
Okay. Now, next week we're watching a movie-length documentary.
Oh. Wow.
Called When We Were Kings. It was released in 1996. It's about the famous rumble in the jungle between Muhammad Ali and George Foreman.
Wow.
Mate, this won the Academy Award for the best documentary in 1996. It's a movie, but it's a documentary.
How does it get classified?
You see footage that was from the reporters that were there, Muhammad Ali himself, George Foreman, all the dramas that happened, the aftermath, the lead up. So it does kind of have a narrative that we're going to follow, but it is all about an event, a true event.
Are there actors?
No, this is a documentary. It's them.
So how did it become a movie?
Well, it became a documentary.
How does it get classified as a movie?
Because it's movie length.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's like 2 hours long. It's a brilliant, brilliant documentary. And that even if you know nothing about
Peter
boxing,
Jackson 8 days a week is like 8 hours long, and it's not movie length, and it's a documentary.
This was released. I saw this in the cinema.
Wow.
I watched this at the movies. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
So my question for you,
right?
Okay.
What's it called?
When we were kings.
Right, yeah, you go.
So it's about the rumble in the jungle.
Mm-hmm.
What year was the rumble in the jungle? A, 1972. B, 1973, C, 1974, or D, 1975?
Oh, man, I've got no idea. 73.
It was 74. C.
Far out.
Yeah, 1974. But look, I think this is going to be an interesting little – it's different for the show. We're not talking about a fictional movie here or a movie based on a true story.
Okay.
We're watching a movie about – a true story. It is the true story that we're watching. Not actors.
Yeah.
It's the people who are involved. And they're interviewed. You get sort of the post-interview during the thing happening, commentary. A remarkable movie.
Okay.
Despite it being a documentary, you're going to love it.
Oh, well,
next week,
see.
When We Were Kings on The Best Movies You've Never Seen. Trev, see you then.
See you then.